Is Daf Kuf Chav Gimel. We got to two lines down. We were talking about different types of muksa, klishon lachto le'isser in particular, whether or not one can move it letzarach gufo or letzarach makomo. So Gemara says two lines down, esive, abaye, l'rabba. Meducha im yeshba. Meducha is a type of a grinder, a crusher. So meducha im yeshba shum, if there's some type of garlic that's maybe still in the grinder, so then metalton also, you can move it because there's garlic. The garlic is something that's mutter. Food is never, almost never mukhs, as long as it's edible. So therefore, you can move the medocha because there's the garlic that's still inside of it. But im lav, if there is no garlic, if it's empty, then ein metalton also, you cannot move it. Because this is a kli shem lachto le'isser. Since the medocha is meant to grind, that's an isser tochen, it's a kli shem lachto le'isser. So we see from here that you may not move a kli shem lachto le'isser for any purpose. Even if sarach gufo, even sarach makomo, the Braya says it's usher to move. So Gemara says, Amar le'ah hamani, who is the author of this Braya? It's Rabbi Nechemihi. Damar ein kli nital elo le'tzorach tashmisha. Rabbi Nechemihi is a das yachid. He says the only way you're allowed to move an item is for its own purpose. Litzarach tashmisho. So since the purpose of a medocha is for grinding, you can't use it. It's an isser. So he does not hold of kli shemachla isser's mutter, litzarach gufov. You're using it for a different heter purpose, or litzarach makomo. So that's the author of the braisa, but we don't hold like Rabbi Nechad. Eisvei, we're asked from a Mishnah in Maseches Beitz, I believe this is. It says that Beishami Omrim, you can't take this type of saw of some sort to cut meat. And Beis Hillel Matir, he permits one to do so. The Shavin, they both agree. Shim Katzav Alabasav, you already cut the meat. You don't need to cut meat anymore. She'asar Lataltal, you can't move it anymore. So if you just look at Rashi to explain the question, Rashi 4 narrow lines down, Rashi says, She'asar Lataltalo. To hide the Kashar Beis Hillel, the only reason why Beis Hillel permits you to move this big type of knife, this sword, this saw, is Mishum Simchas Yantif Kesharu. It's a special heter of Simchas Yantif to cut the meat. But since you already cut the meat and you don't need the knife anymore, even if it's going to be Tzarech Gufo for some other purpose that's not Simchas Yantif or the Tzarech Mekomo, it's in the place, you cannot move it even according to Beis Hillel. So here, yet again, the only heter to move Kli Shlemach Le'isser is for Simchas Yantif, but not Stam for Tzarech Gufo, Tzarech Mekomo. So this, again, is another question to our Yesod. The Gemara says, initially, Savar Lishnuye Le Rabbi Nechemiah. They initially wanted to say, this too is Rabbi Nechemiah, who's the Das Yachid, who doesn't allow one to move a Kli Shlemach Le'isser L'Tzarach Gufo L'Tzarach Mekomo. However, Kevin the Shama Laha Dama Rav Chinina Bar Shlamya, once they heard what he had said, Mishmei the Rav, in the name of Rav, HaKol Modim, everyone agrees, B'sichi, Zairi, U'mizori, these items, which Rashi explains, that either different instruments used for dyeing, D-Y-E that is, or for weaving, Rashi quotes another opinion, different types of instruments, whatever they're used for. These are kevan, says the Gemara, dechevan, the kapit alayu, since people are makbid on using them, la miyachlu makam, they have a designated place to use them, hochanami miyachlu makam, these as well. In other words, this is a unique type of muksa we referred to yesterday, which is called muksa machmas chesron kis, something that's muksa because it might lose value. It's special, it's specialized, no one wants to use the instruments used for weaving or for dyeing for some other purpose. So that's why it's usher, even according to Beis Hillel. The only heter of using a muksa machmas chesron kis is for simchas yantif, but stam, to use a mole knife, to use a butcher knife or a shechting knife, any of these types of things, they're very miyuchad for its purpose. It's called muksa machmas chesron kis. Just interesting, there is, I mentioned before, that food is never muksa. As long as food is edible, it's not muksa. There are, I guess, a couple examples where you can have food being muksa, and that's very relevant for Ezra. Ezra sells esrogim, and he also sells matzahs. These are food. Esrogim are edible. By definition, they have to be edible, and matzah also is edible. Let's say you have it before Sukkot, the merchandise now, it's your schara. So it's a week before Pesach. You don't want it to get ruined or cracked. So poskim say matzah is actually, if you're selling it, or even if you own it, you don't want it to get cracked because you want it to be shalim for Pesach, it would be muksa on the Shabbos prior to Pesach, or any other Shabbos leading up to it, because you don't plan to eat it, you want to preserve it in the way it is, so too with esrogim. You know, that people use and play around and touch the esrogim, they can ruin it. It's their merchandise. Ah, it's food. There's an exception. If it's muksa machmas cheson kis, it would actually be muksa. Fine. So the Gemara now says further, Itmar. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kornas shel zahavim, a certain type of hammer that is used by goldsmiths, shaninu, is that that's what we're referring to. Meaning we're going back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah said in the yesterday's daf, the beginning of the parak, that you're allowed to use a hammer to open up, to crack open a nut. So we were debating what type of hammer. Initially we said it's only a hammer that was designated for nuts. Then we said, no, that's of course mutter. It was even a hammer that was designated for hammering in for the blacksmiths to use. That, although it's klish l'machtel iser, you could use it for davar heter. But now, Rabbi Yochanan says we're actually referring to a type of hammer used for zahavim, for goldsmiths. That's what we're referring to. Comes along now, Rav Shemin bar Abba Amar Kornos shel besamim. It was actually using a hammer used to crush besamim, to crush spices, shaninu. That's what we're referring to. So if you just look at Rashi, who cares what type of hammer we're referring to? So Rashi says here, a little bit less than halfway down the narrow lines, a Kornos shel zahavim, Ava pi de kapit alayu ktsas. Even though people are a little bit particular about using the goldsmith hammer, shetzarach sheichalak l'radad tasim. When you want gold to be flattened out, they would hammer it. You need it to be smooth. The hammer has a little chip in it. It's not going to have the gold be flattened well. So they're a little bit, slightly makbid on it to make sure it stays smooth. Afil hachi, kevin demesakin ayada ayadeh haka. So since whenever you use a hammer, it actually makes it better. The more you use it, the flatter the hammer itself gets. So it's actually beneficial to use it. Therefore, idea ka shemak al sadin by hitting it on top of the other part, lo maksi, like people are not that makbid on it, not maksi it. And so therefore that's allowed. And kol shekain certainly shall shar nefachim kirab. And certainly other types of goldsmiths or blacksmiths, certainly their hammers are less of a concern of how makbid people are. So in other words, even though a goldsmith's hammer is somewhat, people are somewhat machbid on it, and you might think it's muksa, machmas, cheson kis, we learn from here that that's not the case. You may use it for the purpose of opening up nuts. In contrast to that, when it comes to besamim, we'll see besamim is a little bit more different. People are more machbid on the hammers used to crush besamim. Why is that? So the Gemara says, man damar besamim, the one who says you could use the hammer that's meant for crushing besamim, that's allowed, that's mutta to use to crack open nuts, that's not considered mukusa machmas chesun kis. Kol shekain, the zahavim, certainly, a goldsmith's hammer would be allowed as well. Why? What's the difference? Because we see from this other direction, the chiluk in just a second. But however, man damar shel zahavim, the one who allows you to use a goldsmith's hammer, that's not mukusa machmas chesun kis. Aval, but in contrast to that, besamim is kapit alayu, but people are makbid on using a hammer for besamim. That distinction is, people are more makbid on besamim hammers than it is for goldsmith's hammers. Why? So Rashi says, kapit alayu, one line there, shlo yimas. Because when it comes to a besamim crusher, you don't want it to get dirty and disgusting. You're using it for food, for herbs, for spices. And therefore, people are more makbid on besamim than it is for the goldsmith's hammer. And that's the difference. So the reason why we bring this in, because this discusses, again, muksa, machmas, chesun kis, which is what we just introduced in the Gemara. So Gemara now says, vesa hakush, vesa karkar, v'chulu. So these were different items mentioned in the Mishnah that were used for like weaving. They're different items that the Mishnah says you could use. You could use letzarach gufo, letzarach mekomo. So the Gemara now says that Tana Rabbanan paga is a unripe type of fig. It wasn't fully ripe yet. Shetamna betevin, that was buried in some type of straw. The reason for this, Rashi says, it helps it ripen quicker. You know, people put avocados in brown bags, it helps it ripen. There's certain tips, different techniques to help fruit ripen better. Someone once told me that there's I never used this term before, but I think they call it like a life hack or something, that the way to help avocados ripen quicker, you put it in the oven on a certain temperature and it ripens it. So we once tried it in the house, it didn't work. But there are different tricks people could utilize to help fruits ripen. So apparently, by putting a fig that's not ripe yet into the straw helps it ripen quicker. So you have now this paga shetamna betevin, you put it in the tevin. The charara is some type of bread that's made with coals. Shetamna begichalim, you have it now buried in coals. Im megula miktas, if part of the fig or part of the bread is exposed, so mutil tata, you could just take the, grab onto the end of the fig, the end of the bread, and pull it out, because you're holding onto that which is not muksa, the food. But im lav, if it's entirely buried, entirely covered up by the coals, or entirely covered up by the straw, and straw and coals are both muksa, then asul tata, you can't move it, because you have to push over the straw and the coals to get to the fig and the bread that's hidden below. So it depends whether the food is exposed or not exposed. Comes along Rabbi Elazar ben Tadai, Omer Tochvin Bekush ubekarkar. You could take these items which we just mentioned, the Mishnah, and you could kind of poke away at the straw, poke away the coals in order to uncover the items that are food, the harara, the paga, and then v'hei menaros me'alem, kind of maneuver, manipulate some of the coals, and then it's going to end up falling out. The fig will fall out, the bread will fall out, and then you could access this. And Amr of Nachman Halacha, Krebazim and Tadai, that's why Paskin. In other words, that you can use these items in order to shift around the coals in the Tevin. Even though they are muksa, you're touching them indirectly. So the Gemara says, is this to suggest? Lememra, the Savar of Nachman, Tiltum and Atzad, Lo Shmei Tiltum. When a person moves something indirectly, it's not muksa. What's muksa? If I grab the coal in my hand, if I grab the straw in my hand, that's muksa. But to use it indirectly, to use the poke it around with some other instrument, a cane or whatever these things are called, that would be allowed. That's not called tiltum. That's not a violation of muksa. Is that really where Rav Nachman says? But don't we have that Hummer of Nachman himself? Hai Pugla, this type of Pugla, which is a radish, it's snown. Which is detached from the ground, that's now somehow covered up by whatever dirt, but it's detached. It's not an issue of kotzer. Pugla milamala lamata shari, mimata lamala aser. What that means is, if you have, depending where the wide end is and the skinny end, you know, radish starts off skinny at the tip and it gets wider. So if you have it buried in the ground, not attached, it's detached. But for whatever reason, it's buried in dirt. So if the wide part's on top and the skinny part's on the bottom, you can pull the wide part out, up, you're not moving any dirt. The dirt might collapse afterwards, but you're not moving any dirt. You're just pulling it out of the hole. If, however, it's that way, where the wider side is the bottom is buried, the tip is the smaller tip is on top, when you pull it up, you're now moving all the dirt. That's the wide part is buried underneath it. That would be usur. So the Gemara says, why is that usur? I'm pulling the radish. Isn't that tiltum atzad? I mean, pulling the radish, granted the dirt's going to move, that isn't that tiltum atzad? So we see that Rav Nachman prohibited one to do that, and therefore it's tiltum atzad is called tiltum. So we have a stira, how Rav Nachman paskins legabe tiltum and atzad, whether indirect movement is a problem or not. And the Gemara answers, hadar be Rav Nachman meahi. Rav Nachman retracted from the second statement, he ended up paskin that one can pull the radish out, regardless of whether the wide part's on the top or in the bottom, because he does paskin tiltul min atzad lo shmei tiltul. It's not a violation of muksa. Now the Gemara says further, machat shayah litoba, we said in the Mishnah, that if you have a needle, you're allowed to use a needle in order to remove a thorn, to remove a splinter in the skin. So Gemara says, Shalach le Rava brei the Rava le Rav Yosef. He sent the following message. Yomadeinu Rabbeinu machat shel nitel charara o uksa mahu. So he wanted to know, teach us, Rebbe, what's the din if a needle, if the charara, which is the end where the hole will go in, uksa is the tip, the sharp point, if either one of these were removed from the needle, is it muksa or not muksa? Does it still have a function without the hole where you can't thread the wool through or whatever strings you're putting through, or it's missing the tip, does that render it to no longer, rather, does it render it muksa? So Amalei, Tanisu, we have in the Mishnah, Machat Shayad, Lito Ba Esakot. The reason why a needle is not muksa on Shabbos, certainly you would think it is muksa, because needles are meant to sew. Sewing is also, it's a malacha. But the reason why it's not muksa is because there's a purpose and you're able to remove a thorn, remove a splinter. So that's the whole point. So if it's all about removing a coat, who cares whether it has the hole at the end or not at the end? As long as it has a sharp point at the end, that's sufficient for it to be usable and not considered muksa. So Gemara then says, Esive, machat shenitel charara o uksa tohora. They quote a Mishnah from Maseches Kalim.
Yeah. So in general, if you have a certain kli that for the specific thing that it was created is not usable, but for something else is, it still remains not.
So that's where it's going to go right now. Does it go based on Kalim or does it go based on the usage? Very good. So Gemara says again, Esive asks from the Mishnah Maseches Kalim, machat shenitel charara o uksa Torah. If you have a needle and either the hole or the tip was removed, it's tahor. We know legabe hilchos tuma, you have to have only kalim can become tame. A rock, a branch doesn't become tame. It has to have a use, has to have a purpose. So if the needle is missing either through the hole or the tip, there's no function anymore. You can't use it. So that would be tahor. So we see, just like it should not be a kli legabe hilchos tuma v'tara, it should not be a kli legabe hilchos Shabbos, and it should be muksa on Shabbos if it's missing either one of these. So Amar Abaye says, Tuma Shabbos Karamis. You're asking a question from Tuma onto Shabbos? These are two different worlds. Tuma, Kli Ma'isa Ba'inan. With respect to Tuma, you need a Kli. If it's a Kli, it's Tame. If it's not a Kli, it's Tahor. But lagabe Shabbos, lein in Shabbos, miti de chazi be'inan. It's not dependent on what's a kli, what's not a kli, lagabe hilchot Shabbos. It depends on what has a use or what does have a use. So you could have something like a needle that's missing the hole, that's not a kli, and tower, but it is considered usable, and therefore would be permitted on Shabbos. So that's the distinction I think Rikwi is trying to get at. So the Gemara now says, v'hat nami chazir l'mishkalei ba'kutz, and this continuing, and since this is able to remove a thorn, remove a splinter, it's allowed on Shabbos. So comes along Rava says no. Amar Rava says, man the kamosiv shaper kamosiv. The one who asked the question from Tuma the Shabbos was correct in doing so. He says, no, it doesn't depend on usage, it depends on being a kli. If it's not a kli legabe hilchos tumah, it's not a kli legabe hilchos Shabbos, and would be mukse, even though you can have some type of usage. So Gemara now says, meisive, machat shav bein nekuva bein shein nekuva, you have a needle, whether it has a hole or not a hole, mutter lo taltel b'Shabbos, you may move it, it's not mukse on Shabbos. We only mention the significance of there being a hole with respect to tumah. If there's a hole, it's a kli and subject to tumah. If there is no hole, it's not a kli and tahor. So we see clearly the Braisa does make a chilek. Shabbos, we don't care about there being a hole. Even without a hole, it's still muk. It's still not muk. It's still usable. On hilchos tumah, without a hole, it's not a kli. So this is Akasha to Rava, who thought that the halachas were exactly the same, Shabbos and Tumah. Here we're saying not. Again, if it has no hole, it's not a kli and tahor. But Lagabe Shabbos, even without a hole, it's mutter, because it has a purpose, you can still remove a splinter. So how do you have such a chilek? And so the Gemara answers, Targuma Abaye. Abaye explains, Aliba de Rava, according to Rava, we have this many times in Shas, where although they're arguing Abaye and Rava, they do support and defend each other. So Abaye comes in the defense of Rava. Migul begulmi askinan. We're talking about a gulmi. We'll see Rashi in just a moment. Dimimlach alayu umashulei mana. Gulmi is, there's two types of, there's different stages when the hole could not be there. Either when you're making the needle. So initially they make a little needle, a metal piece, and then afterwards they put the hole in. Gulmi is before they put the hole in, when they're making the machat. There's no hole yet, but there's potential that they will put the hole in. There's also, after the needle's already been made, they remove the hole after the fact. That's considered a broken kli. So we're talking about here where they made the needle without the hole yet, and since it has the ability to put a hole in, so that's why legabe hilchos Shabbos is still considered a kli. But if it's a ready needle that's been made with a hole, and then the hole breaks off, that's called a broken kli. That's where it'd be mukse. Just look at Rashi to make this all clear. Rashi says, begulmi, last six narrow lines, gulmi machatin, the gulmi, I don't know how they, what English word they use here, but when making the needles, ha'om dos linakev, that are prepared to have the hole in it at some point in the process, the nekuva nigmar avlachta, when you put the hole in, you've completed the process of making the machat, v'sheina nekuva, and it does not get a hole, eino nigmar avlachta, it's not complete without the hole yet, hilkach linin tumo hudulo havikli. Since it has not been completed yet, the hole is not there yet, it's not a kli, lahab gabi hilchos tumah. Avaba tiltil shari dechazi lukutz. But it still has a purpose for hilchos Shabbos, because you could still use the tip, the sharp point, in order to remove the splinter. Aval, says the Gemara back inside, aval hecha, denita charara o uksa. If you removed it, once it already got the hole, and then it was removed, so now, adam zork leben grutos, people throw it into the garbage now, that's considered shivrei kli, it's thrown amongst grutos, which are other broken shards of pottery, so that would be muksa after the fact. So that's the difference. If it doesn't have a hole before, in the beginning of the process, that is mutta to be used, but if it lost the hole, it broke off afterwards, that would be considered broken, and would be muksa on Shabbos. Gemara now says, last three lines of the page here. Gemara talks about a case what's called Asuve Yanuka. What's Asuve Yanuka? So this is a machlokas between Rav Nachman and Rav Shesh, whether it's mutter or aser. So the Gemara, Rashi first interprets, so this is a Tosas argues, but we'll just do Shitas Rashi for now. Rashi says, Asuve Yanuka is lahalik seder eivarav, kishu nolad eivarav misparkin v'tzarech liyashrim. When a child's born, we know that the limbs are a little bit looser, they're not so attached to each other, they're very flexible. So sometimes they, I don't know, wrap them in something to preserve the body, to preserve the bones. So to do this on Shabbos, to Asuve Yanuka, says the Gemara, Rav Nachman Aser, he says, Aser, why is it Aser? Says Rashi, Didamri L'masakin, looks like you're fixing something. And Rav Shesh Shari, he thinks it's permitted. So that's the machlokes, because we'll see what it's based on. They actually use this Gemara here, where the person's allowed to use a bite plate on Shabbos. You put a bite plate in, or in the, that keeps your teeth straight. So is that allowed? So they distinguish between whether or not the teeth are already straight and it's there just to preserve it, or it's actually not straight and it's starting to shift your teeth into the proper place. So this is actually a discussion the post can base on this Gemara. But for our purposes, so this is machlokas. If Nachman says such a thing on Shabbos is usur, Rav Sheshe said it's mutter. So what's the basis? So Gemara says last two lines of Amin Aleph here, Amar of Nachman Aminah, how do I know this to be the case? That's usur to do this. The Tanan, he quotes a Mishnah. This Mishnah is also in Masechah Shabbos here. We're going to see it in like 20 days from today. Ein osin apiktozin, going on to Amin Beis now, b'Shabbos. You can't make this on Shabbos. What is apiktozin? I'm not sure exactly how to pronounce it. Says Rashi, lahaki. It's some type of drink that make a person to vomit, to clear his bowels. And shows him mashum amaki. He drinks it and clears out his mouth, his stomach. Lo lirafua el laharik esmeyav. He's not sick. He's not ill. It's not for refua. It's rather just to clean out his system. Shayuchal lechol lishos hayom harbe. He's trying to eat a lot. I don't know. He wants to eat a lot of food. He's in a hot dog eating contest or something they had this past week, July 4th. It's a weird thing that they do in this country. So he wants to clear out his stomach to make sure he's really hungry, has as many hot dogs as possible. So he takes this little drink. Laharik esmeyav shayuchal lechol lishos harbe. And the afagav delo gazer be mishum shchikas samanim, even though it's not subject to the issur of crushing herbs because it's not refua, the halav refuhu, usur mishum demesakin gavra. It's usur, not because refua. It's usur because it's cleaning the person's system out. It's a type of tikkun gavra. So just like that's usur on Shabbos, so too positioning someone's bones, a child's bones, would also be a tikkun gavra and usur. Rav Sheshes responds back on the top of Amud Beis here. Rav Sheshes hosama lav orchei hacha orchiu. That's not normal for a person to drink something to clean out his stomach to eat more. That's abnormal. That's why it's usur. But this is normal. Hacha orchei, says Rashi. Hacha orchei farehu kamisha machilu umashkeu. Therefore, it's like eating and drinking. Meaning, not that putting child's bones in position is eating and drinking, but just like eating and drinking is normal, so through wrapping children in a blanket or whatever they use, that's considered normal. It's considered derech, and therefore that would not be tikkun gavra. It's not something out of the ordinary, and would be permitted. So now the Gemara wants to know how the Rav Sheshes, what's his basis that such a thing is mutter? So Amar Rav Sheshes mina aminila. How do I know it's mutter to wrap a child to keep the bones in position? The Tanan, the Mishnah says machat shayad. This is why we brought this Mishnah here, this discussion, because it talks about a needle. Machat shayad, a needle litobas a coat in order to remove the splinter. So Gemara says, what's the raya from this? So Rashi says, first narrow line down, he says litobas a coat alma tikuna gavre b'midi delav l'refua. Why do you remove a splinter from the finger? It's to fix the gavra, to make him look nice, to make him better. It's not refua. There's nothing dangerous. The person's not ill with the splinter inside. He's uncomfortable. But it's really a tikkun gavra. So just like removing splinters on Shabbos is permitted, so to keeping the bones intact in position would be considered mutter as well. Correct. Not takana. So then the Gemara says, Rav Nachman says, no, you can't pick miraya from removing splinters. Hasam pakid hacha lo pakid. There, the splinter is completely separate from the body. You're not fixing the body by removing it. But here, the bones are not pakid. Pakid means when something is enveloped in it. The bones are the body itself. There, you're actually fixing the body. You're fixing the bones, and therefore, there's a big distinction, says Rashi, just to see this clearly in Rashi, four narrow lines down. Pakid hakot hazeh, this splinter, eino mechuber bo, it's not connected to the guy's body. Ela mufkad v'nasin sham. It's laid inside there, but it's buried inside the skin. V'hotziyaz hotzazu ain't a tikkun, not a tikkun. It's just removing a thorn, moving a splinter. Hacha lo pakid. But here the bones v'dami l'mlacha shemisadrin u'machnisin l'makom chiburim. But here you're positioning the bones, which is part of the body. That's a real tikkun gavra. So this is an interesting machlokes between the amarim. Mishnah now says five lines down. Kanashal zaysim. You have a Kaddash Ozeisim. Rashi explains, I don't know exactly, but some type of reed that they would use as part of, in the process of squeezing out the oil. I don't know if it comes from the olive itself, or maybe the stem of it, but some type of reed that you kind of look through, and you can see one end to the other end. Rashi explained, just to read inside, Rashi's Kaddash Ozeisim is La'achar Shemesikasam, after you've crushed the olives, Tzovram b'ma'atan, you kind of gather all the different olives together. Ushmanim, and the oil is mesasef b'sochan, and the oil gathers together in noach lates, it allows it to leave easier. Maybe it's like a funnel of some sort. And v'yesh l'kana l'hapchan bo, there's a type of reed, or a little, I don't know, kana, what?
A cane.
A A cane, okay. A cane, they use it to kind of flip over everything and mix everything, maybe. U livdok im kamro kol tzarchan, if everything was needed, it was done. U magiin lebeis habad. So again, I don't know exactly how the process was used, but some type of instrument was used, called a cane. So it's straight, I have a picture in my masift. It's like a little tube. In the end, has a little bubble at the end, like a little kesherosi. That's what it is. So the Gemara says, again, the Mishnah says, kadosh alzeisim, this little cane, this little pipe, im yesh kesher birosha, if there's a little knot or a little bubble at the top, then mekabel tuma, it's mekabel tuma, vimlav ain't mekabel tuma. If not, it doesn't. Because the din of kibel tuma, we have to have, it has to have a little base kibel, a little area to catch something. So if there's a little, at the end, a little bubble, they call it a kesher or not, that means a little container to hold oil in it. That's a base kibel that's subject to tuma. If it's just a kind of straight pipe, and it goes from one end to the next end, it can't catch any oil or anything, that would not be a kli and not mekabel tuma. And the Gemara says, Benkach, Benkach, either way, whether it has this kesher or no kesher, it's nita of a Shabbos, it may be moved on Shabbos because it does have a function. You're able to use it to flip around the zesim. Okay. So the Gemara now says, Amai, why is this the case? Why would we say that this thing, this kana of a zayis, is subject to tumah? Even if it has a kesher, even if it has a little bubble or knot on top of it, pshute kli'etsu. It comes from the tree of an olive, I guess. So the din is, pshute kli'etsu, a flat piece of wood, pshute kli'etsu, ain't a makabal tumah. It's not makabal tumah. Only if there's a little cavity, a little base kibul, does a kli'etsu become tummy. But pshute kli'etsu, a flat board of wood, is not makabal tumah. In essence, this reed is just a flat piece of wood. There's no base kibul, the Gemara says, at least in the Havamina. My time, and what's the reason? Because you need base in the pasuk, dumya, the sak. But you know, the pasuk connects an eight to a sak. A sak is like a little bag. A bag has a little area you could hold something in a bag, a base kibul. So the only time an eight is metame is if it has a base kibul. So how could you say that this karnash azesim, which at this stage at least seems to be pshut ekliyetz, of course it should be tahor. How can the Mishnah suggest it's tamei? And the Gemara says, Tana, Mishmei Dir Binechemia, Bisho Shemahabich Bezesim, Hovcho V'ro Abo. When you flip around the olives with this type of cane, this little pipe, you could see through it. So what is the significance of seeing through it? So if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, Hofcha v'ro'a, b'chala rosho, through the little cavity from the end of the reed, sh'meshtayar sham aideshu pakuk b'kesher min ha-shemen, hazav min ha-zesim, bodek bo imagil la'atzur. So I don't know exactly what this was, the function maybe of a better explanation in the article, but somehow you're able to see through one end to the other end, and that indicates clearly it wasn't simply a shute kli'etz, but rather it was some type of base kibul there. There's a little hole in there to catch oil, to hold things, and therefore it's not shute kli'etz, rather it's considered base kibul and subject to tuma. Again, I don't know the matias exactly what this was for.
Yeah, at the end is a little base kibul where the oil goes into that little, and then he examines that oil to see if
uh-huh. So you look inside of it to see the oil that's caught, and then since you can examine it to see how clear or whatever it is, okay. Okay. Excellent. So Gemara, the Mishnah now says, Rabbi Yossi Omer, kol kalim, nitlin, all types of kalim, all types of utensils can be moved on Shabbos, chutz min amasar gadol, v'yaseh d'sham acharisha, except for these two items. What are these two items? So you either have this amasar gadol, which is a type of a huge saw of some sort, or an axe, a saw, I think, meant to cut beams of wood, logs of wood, that's aser. And the reason why it's us is because it's muksa machmas cheson kis. People are very machbe not to use it for other items. And this yased shamacharisha, which is some form of a knife that was used for plowing to plow through the dirt. So these are two items that are considered, again, muksa machmas cheson kis. So the Gemara says, now, Amar of Nachman, hai uchla de katre. Uchla de katre is some type of copper instrument used with little holes. And Rashi explains here, they'd use it to kind of spray water on the clothing when they clean the clothing. It would be like a sprayer of some sort. So there are little holes to spray through. And others say it was actually used to spray perfume through, maybe, or cologne onto the clothing. So this uchla de katre is kiyaseid shomacharisha. In other words, it's a muksa machmas cheson kis. People are very machbid not to use it for other purposes, and therefore it's not it's a muksa and not cannot be moved on Shabbos. That's furthermore, again, the ochlad de katre is kiyaseid shomacharisha damya. Amr Abai, Abai says, charva dushkapi, which Rashi says are different knives used by the for leather and making straps and belts and things out of leather. And then the sakina dashkavta, which Rashi explained, referring to different knives used by the butcher, and chatzina denagri, which are other types of utensils or knives used by the carpenter. So these things are also kiyaseid shemachrisha dami. All of these are specialized utensils and instruments that people don't want to use for other items, so they all fall under the category of muksa machmas cheson kis. So the Gemara says further. By the way, these things are not necessarily expensive. Normally people think, because of the word itself, the phrase, Moksa, Machmas, Cheson, Kis, sounds like it's going to be a loss of money because people, they cost a lot of money. Not true. You can have something, I don't know how much a mole knife costs, but I don't know, it doesn't cost that much, I assume. Maybe it does. But it's not because of the value, it's because people Machbid not to ruin it. So you could have something that's very little value, and yet it's Moksa, Machmas, Cheson, Kis, because you don't use it for other items. On the other hand, if you have something very expensive, a person could have a phone, iPhone, $600, and let the kids play with it and throw around the house, that wouldn't necessarily be Moksa, Machmas, Cheson, Kis, because they don't care if it gets broken or people use it. So it goes on both extremes. It's not about value, it's about usage. So the Gemara then says now, Tanya Rabbanan, the Braisa tells us a little bit about the history of how Moksa evolved over time. It says, Berishona, initially, how you omim, they would say, Shlosha, Kalim, Nitlin, B'Shabbos, only three items are allowed to be taken on Shabbos. Miktsoa shel Deveya, some type of saw or knife to cut fig cakes. Vizuma, Listarin, shel Kedera, which Rashi explains here is a large type of spoon that they would take to remove all the disgusting part, the Zuhuma, shel Kedera, whatever is bad in the Kedera, to scoop it out. Forgetting any issues of Bora. Visakin Kitana, Shagabe, Ashulchan, and a small little knife on the table to cut your food, to cut your bread, to cut your knife. That was all. Other than that, nothing else could be touched. Three items to use on Shabbos. This big knife to cut fig cakes, this scooper, and then and knives. Now, this is clear, by the way, from this Gemara. There's a Gemara in Nedarim there that says that they used to eat without utensils. They used to use your hands. It's clear from the Gemara. They wouldn't use utensils. It doesn't say fork or a spoon or a regular, just a knife. That's it. But there's no fork or a spoon. They'd use their hands. Mamash eat. That was the way of the derech back then. So only these three items were allowed to be moved on Shabbos. And then the Gemara says, Hitiru, they went ahead. Hitiru is part of the statement. And then the Chazu Vitiru, then they went further and allowed more. Doesn't say what was allowed. And then Chazu Vitiru, and then they allowed even more until they said, Kola Kalim Nitlin B'Shabbos, the other Kshim, that everything's mutter to be used. And then the exception was the Aser. Chutz min Amaser Gadol V'Yosid Shem Achareishi, except for these types of items, which are Muksa, Machmas, Cheson, Kis. So that was the different developments over time. So we have to have a little bit of clarity, what was at each stage. So Mayatiru v'chazavitiru v'chazavitiru. What was permitted at each additional stage over time? So Amar Bai says hitiru initially davar shemlachto leheter letzarach gufo. First they said, you know what? We'll allow anything that's mutter. We'll allow you letzarach gufo to use it, the actual item. But letzarach makomo, if it was in your place, it's still us. Then chazavitiru davar shemlachto leheter letzarach makomo. Then they add another area of a heter, that you can even move a klish l'machtel heter if it's l'tzarach makom, if it's in the place that you need. Then, chazav etir, then they permitted yet another thing, davar shemlachtel iser, they permitted l'tzarach gufo in, to use something like a hammer, for a heter purpose, like opening a nut, but l'tzarach makom below, they did not allow one to move a hammer if it was in a makom you needed. V'dayin b'yad achas, and still, only with one hand could you move things, but b'sheya yad avlo, but you couldn't use with two hands, until they finally made the statement that kol ha-kelim nitlam b'Shabbos, you could move all types of utensils on Shabbos, v'afilu b'sheya daim. So that was the evolution of Moksa over time. So Amar le Rava, Rava says, Michli, let's understand this for a second. No, I think it means just using just one hand as a hecker. I don't think it means indirectly, but I think one hand versus two hands. I think that's what it means, no?
Yeah.
Yeah. But if it's something that was heavy, that required two, that was not part of the heter.
That's what made a difference. If you needed two, you couldn't.
Right. So then the Gemara says, Amar Le Rava, Rava says, Michti, let's understand this for a moment. Hitiru katani, they said it's allowed. Mali letzorach gufa, mali letzorach makomo. In other words, once they permitted the category of kli, shemlachta leheter, why would one distinguish whether you're using letzorach gufa or letzorach makomo? That chilik doesn't make much sense. If it's the category of kli, shemlachta leheter, they should both be permitted, letzorach gufa and letzorach makomo. So Rava therefore tweaks what happened throughout history with respect to Moksa. And Ella Amar Rava, Rava says initially, Hitiru davar shemlachta leheter, bein letzorach gufo, bein letzorach makomo. That was one heter, one stage. Then, the chazav hitiru mechamel etzel, they permitted one to use it if it was going to be in an area where from the sun to the shade it's going to get ruined. He says you could use it, move it from the sun to the shade. That was an additional heter afterwards. The chazav hitiru then, they expanded it to davar shemlachta leiser, letzorach gufo, u letzorach makomo. You can't separate between those two heterim. And then they said, in, that would be allowed when it comes to a kli shlamachtel iser, but mechamel etzel lo, one cannot move it from the sun to the shade to preserve, to protect the kalim of a kli shlamachtel iser. And then a dayin, they still held out, b'adam echad in, b'shei adam lo. One person would be allowed, but not two people. If it's so heavy that you need two people to lift it, that would be usr. Ad until finally the final heter and the final statement was ad she'amru kol hakelim nitlim b'shabbos afilu b'shnei bnei adam. All utensils can be moved even if it entails having been carried by two people together. So that was the evolution. Okay. So Gemara now says Eisivei Abaye asks the question Medocha im yesh bo shum. We saw this on the top of Amun Aleph. If you have a type of grinder that has some garlic in it, metalton also you could move it because there's a shum in it. There's some garlic in it. Vim lav, if it's empty, however, ein metalton also you cannot move it if it's empty. So what's the question? So why is this a problem? If it's a klish machtel iser, shouldn't it be allowed bein legufa bein le mekomo? It sounds like if there's no shum, it's aser entirely. Why? It's a klish machtel iser. That much we agree with. But why is it aser if it's tzarech gufa tzarech mekomo? And the Gemara says, no. Here's a case, hacha b'maaskinan mechamel etzel. Ein echanami, if you want to use this medocha for tzarech gufa or tzarech mekomo, that would be allowed. The situation that Bryce is referring to is where it's trying to move mechamel etzel. That's where we said it's aser. So Eisivei, Gemara asks further now, v'shavin shim katav alav basar sh'aser l'taltal. He said if a person already had cut, we had the Amun Aleph as well, Basil says you could use a certain type of knife to cut meat, it's Simchas Yamta, but he already cut the meat, it's Muksa. Why is it Muksa? Shouldn't it be a Klish L'machtel Isser, the Tzorach Gufo, the Tzorach Makomo? And the Gemara says here as well, it's a Hacha Nami Mecham L'tzel. So you cannot move a Klish L'machtel Isser to protect it from damage. So the Gemara says, and we'll finish with these next three lines here, Amir Rabbi Chanina says, Bimei Nechemia ben Chachliya Nishnesh Mishnezu. During the times of Nechemia, as in Ezra Nechemia, this Mishnah was taught, these dinim were taught. Again, Bimei Nechemia ben Chachliya Nishnesh Mishnezu. The Chassid says in the Pasuk in Nechemia, Bayamim Hahema, in those times were Isi Bihuda, Dorachin Gitas B'Shabbos, I saw that they would do press grapes on Shabbos. Umavin Ha'aremos, they bring different types of baskets and other types of violations on Shabbos. And therefore, already from the time of Nehemiah, did they have to institute the Isser of Muksa? Okay, let's stop here.
So it seems that they went down because they wanted.